Country with your host, Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
My guest on the show is Lindy Ortega. Her two previous albums, Little Red Boots and Cigarettes and Truck Stops, have each moved her music career forward by leaps and bounds. She's rockabilly, she's roots, she's traditional, and has been influenced by a diverse list of singers and songwriters, including Leonard Cohen and Johnny Cash. Several of her songs have been featured on the ABC hit TV show Nashville, and Lindy made a guest appearance herself on the show. Currently, she can be heard on Dean Brody's latest single, Bounty, and on October 8th, she'll release her brand new album entitled Tin Star, featuring the title track, which is the first single, about the love of making music despite the odds of rising to the top. My pleasure to welcome Lindy Ortega to the show. Hey, Lindy.
Hey, that was a great musical intro on your show. I really enjoyed that.
Awesome. Glad you did, and it's great to have you here, and we're going to get into the brand new album very shortly. And what I find cool about it, it's coming out October 8th, not only on iTunes, but there's a limited edition colored vinyl album available.
Yes. We have to say that it's a red colored vinyl, because red is a wonderful color.
That's your favorite color, right? And that ties in with the little red boots that you like to wear, the name of your album as well.
Yep. Red boots, red lipstick. That's my thing.
Did your look evolve and your sound as well, Lindy, over the years? Did it take shape as time went on?
Absolutely. From when I was quite young, when I started doing music, you know, about 100 years ago to now, I guess in the last five years, it just really took on this thing that I've got going now, which is, I describe it, it's like Johnny Cash meets Wonder Woman meets Frida Kahlo. So a little bit of going to the funeral with all the black in the black veil, and I have black flowers in my hair, Frida Kahlo, and then I have the red boots like Wonder Woman. So I don't think anyone else dresses like me. It's very different. Some people think it's weird, but that's okay.
Well, it's cool to have something that's uniquely yours, and people are always going to judge no matter what kind of style you have. But it's so cool that you've got your own individual style. I love the fact also, I was reading that your previous album, Cigarettes and Truck Stops, Hank Williams played a part in influencing that. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of reading music biographies. I think that you get sort of nuggets of information from biographies that you don't get from movies or from online blurbs about the artist. So I was reading that one, and I learned that he was influenced by a blues player called T-Tot, whose real name was Rufus Payne. And that got me interested in early blues and its influence on very early country. And the more I, you know, immersed myself in the blues and tried to figure out the correlation, I saw that, you know, some of my favorite artists, Johnny Cash, for example, I could really see the connection between blues and his progressions and his melodies. And as well, you see it in Hank Williams. And so the Cigarettes and Truck Stops CD really took on sort of a bluesy undertone. From highway to hotel room, in every place we stopped at in between. Oh, I'd hear Dolly singing, you and I were lines in the street. So I guess I gotta tell you that I'm It didn't hurt to have Colin Langdon as a producer who's got a great wealth of knowledge when it comes to the blues.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about working with him. Colin Langdon, a name familiar to so many of us in the music circles. And what influence did he bring to that particular album?
Well, besides the fact that he's another man in black, he's always wearing black, that guy. He's just so well-versed in blues music, and he's such a great player when it comes to that. And he kind of opened and extended my world that I was immersing myself into and brought really great hints of blues into the brand of country that I was doing. Which is a strange brew, I guess, of what you were mentioning earlier, a little bit of rockabilly, a little bit of classic and traditional and a little bit of bluegrass sometimes. I don't know. I mix it up. I shake it up. I'm like shaking baby.
You do. Do you have a name, Lindy, for your sound? I mean, we mentioned all those labels, if you will, or those genres. Do you have a way of summing it up, if that's possible?
I don't really know. I mean, some people have referred to it as like black country or goth country or dark country.
Right.
and then others just throw it into the old Americana pile or the alt country pile, whatever that encompasses. And I don't know. I mean, I just tell people what I'm influenced by. And I do love all the old classic recordings. So ones that span from traditional to blues, traditional country to blues to soul to all that old stuff, because I just love the live off the floor feel of that music from those eras. So all of that sort of is what my music encompasses. And people can call it whatever they want. I'm just happy they're listening.
Good point. I loved in a video when you were, I believe you were about to sing Folsom Prison Blues, of course, the Johnny Cash classic, and you just talked about, because obviously there's a famous country artist out there who bashed some of the old country music, which was kind of hard to believe, but you were defending it all. And
You're the first person who's actually mentioned anything about that, and I was wondering if that was ever going to come out and get me in big trouble. Yes, there was a country artist who said that only old farts and jackasses listen to traditional country, and it was going on and on about how new country is the new way and we need to evolve, quote unquote. And I have to say, I had a few shots of Fireball whiskey during that set, so I was a little, if I could redo that speech, I would have put a little more class in there and a few less swear words, but I would have been more of a lady about it. And Certainly, I understand that there's room for everybody, and I think I was just being a little sassy that night because of the Fireball whiskey. I stand by the fact that I do think that remark was slightly offensive to somebody like me, who is trying to carry on the tradition of that music and who plays tribute to it and has great respect for it. And I felt it was a bit of a slap in the face, you know, basically saying that, you know, that movement's dead and, you know, we need to move to the pop world of country. And I said, no, not me, sir. No siree. And I'm a huge fan of vinyl and all that sort of stuff. And I'm a truist, I guess. So I kind of went off on the handle that day, and somebody put it up on YouTube. And like,
yeah,
I said, you know,
with...
so you can't escape it. You can't escape YouTube these days. And I don't know. I wonder if at some point I'm going to have to be doing some apologizing for some of that. But the crux of what I was trying to say there, I do stand by the crux of it. And I don't know that fellow personally, so I have nothing bad to say about him and on a personal level. And I do apologize. I swore in that video. but other than that, that's where I was coming from with that sentiment.
Yeah, no, Lindy, and I was going to say
now
that I thought it was great.
For it.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody check it out on YouTube. And I thought it was great what you said, actually. I didn't think that anything about it was wrong. What I loved in it was the passion and the fact that you were basically saying, you know, if you're in this genre, you should, I guess any genre, but country music, you should respect the past, understand it, and certainly not bash it, because that's what got to this point. So I really liked what you had to say, and then you went on to sing the Johnny Cash classic, which is one of my favorites. So I thought it was great that you stood up for that.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad you got where I was coming. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. because I love all the old stuff. I mean, I grew up listening to Hank Williams through my dad, who still loves him to this day. And, I mean, you don't get a much better songwriter than Hank. And hard to believe that he had that body of work and he was gone. He died by the age of 29.
29 years of age, 29. It was so sad and tragic. And I think what I find interesting about Hank Williams is, yes, you're right, he was so prolific and had such a great body of work. And that, you know, you think of the song I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, which was my first introduction into Hank Williams, and you would have thought that that would have been a hit song for him during his lifetime, but it never was. And it only ever reached, I believe, number 43 on Billboard, and it wasn't until a dozen years after his death. So a lot of people find that surprising. I certainly did when I read his biography,
yeah.
because you think that would be a classic, but it's more of like a cult classic, I guess you could say, which goes to show when, you know, people are all being crazy about these hit songs, it's like you never know what's going to resonate in a classic hit way down the road. So I don't think people should be so quick to write certain songs off.
Yeah, exactly. Time always tells, and a lot of songs hold on and find an audience down the road, for sure. Now, your brand-new album, Tin Star, is coming out October 8th, produced by Dave Cobb. How great was it working with Dave?
He's awesome. He's such a great guy. He was a lot of fun to work with. You know, he just produced the Jason Isbell record, which is phenomenal, and he did Secret Sisters as well. Worked with Shooter Jennings, so he was well-versed in that sound. He also has a little bit of a rock background, working with Rival Sons and also being in a rock band himself at some point. And so he kind of brought that element a little bit to some of the songs, some of the more rockin' songs on that record. And, he was great. I loved working with him. It was a joy. It was a pleasure to go into the studio every day and be recording here in Nashville and going out for some good food in our lunch break. I have nothing but good things to say about that experience.
Now, on the album Tin Star, are these all songs that you've written or co-written?
I've hand in writing all of them. Three of them are co-writes, and the rest of them are all written by me. So, and
right.
The people that I co-write with are my friends. You know, there are people that, one of them actually was Dave, because I thought it would be great to write with him. And
yep.
Another one is my guitar player who plays, my touring guitar partner, Champagne James Robertson, his name. You might know him from a band called New Country Rehab. We decided, he always plays guitar whenever we're hanging out, and I'm always humming melodies to his guitar parts. So we just decided to collaborate and put something on the record. So he did all the music on that song, and I wrote the lyrics, and that was our collaboration. And then the other one was with my dear friend Bruce Fallis from Nashville, who I call the dude because he's like the Big Lebowski. And and he's such a quirky guy, and we bring our strange minds together, and I think we come up with some really fun songs. So he did a co-write with me on this one.
Yeah, you've got, as you mentioned, those are your friends, so you've got to be pretty comfortable with somebody you're writing songs with, right? It might not start out that way until you become friends, but once you're friends, you can sort of get to the crux of the song a lot quicker than trying to bond with somebody new.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a strange experience sometimes, the co-write thing, because it's like dating. So if it doesn't work, it gets really awkward. You know, it gets awkward very quickly. So it's much better when it's a friend and you have a really good rapport and a good chemistry and that kind of a thing. And so these are the people that it just kind of, it comes organically when I write with them, as opposed to sort of the Nashville way of, you know, we're going to meet from 10 till 6 and we're going to, you know, write a song about this with, like, you know, 8 co-writers. And and
right.
It's got to be like this kind of other song on the radio. All that
yeah.
craziness that goes on.
Well, let's talk about the lead single and the title track called Tin Star. It's a terrific song about pursuing music despite the odds. And a quote from you is, to those who are so driven by their passion that they soldier on despite the odds being against them. And one of the lines I love in there's many great ones, but kind of sums it up. Music keeps on running through the blood in my veins, and it makes me stay.
Yeah.
Obviously, you wrote this song for other people, as you even say in the song. It's sort of to support everybody doing this. What does it mean to you personally?
Well, It's a couple of things. One thing is about the parallels that exist by me being a musician in Nashville, which is very much like Hollywood is for the actors, with the sort of boulevard of broken dreams, and how there's just like so many actors that go out there to try and make it in the movie business. Nashville's like that with the country music business. And you have a city that's very much about its stars, and people come here to learn about them and hopefully get a glimpse of them. And, you know, you go down to Broadway and every other bar is a cover band of all the top 40, you know, hits on country radio. And then you can see like a busker at, you know, the bottom of the street that no one's really paying attention to, probably a phenomenal guitar player. And I guess it's just that parallel that exists. There's so much musicality here, and so many fabulous musicians making music. And I guess things that struck me as interesting is walking into, you know, Robert's Western World on a Monday afternoon, where some of the most crazy chicken picking guitar players I've ever seen are playing for like five people. And you wonder, like, why are they here? They're so good. And, you know, they've probably got gigs with other bands around town and stuff. But you tell that there's this great love, you know, for doing it. And a lot of people that are out here playing, I mean, Nashville's the hardest place to draw an audience because there's so much going on every night, so much music happening. So it's hard to get a crowd out to a show. And everybody knows this down here. And it's quite a feat to have a huge audience out in Nashville. So you do often get these really great musicians that are playing, you know, for like 13 people in a room, you know, and at the basement underneath the record store. But you start to realize really that a lot of what drives the sort of underground current here is just the pure love and passion for music, and that's a beautiful thing, and people will just keep doing it for that, you know. And I guess it's just a tribute, this song, for the people that don't have the fame and the glory. It's not that they don't have the talent, it's just that the stars just didn't quite align in a way that it might, that it's aligned for other people, and that's really sometimes all it comes down to. It doesn't mean because it didn't align for them that they weren't talented people or they're not phenomenal. It just means that it was just a, you know, poor twist of luck or something. But so I wanted to pay tribute to them, and that was what that song was about. And, you know, also the parallel of where I'm at in my career and still being able to very much relate to the buskers and the people that are really struggling hard, but also seeing what it's like to reach another level in my music career and sort of being sometimes at odds with it. And, you know, it's an interesting place to be for me at the moment. So it's just that culmination of that realization and being in this city and it all kind of hitting me. And that's where that song came from.
Well, it's a beautiful song. It was so great, Lindy, to hear the story behind it and the inspiration. A lot of people I know listening will be able to relate to it.
I hope so. Yeah, I think anybody, you know, anyone who's got a dream, anyone who's following a passion, you know, and doing it because they love it. I think it really speaks to anyone like that.
Definitely. Let's share the song now. This is brand new from Lindy Ortega. It's the title track to her upcoming album to be released October 8th. It's called Tin Star, here on In the Country.
No.
That is called Tin Star. The album will be coming out October 8th. You can check her out at lindyortega.com. Beautiful song, Lindy, and again, I love the message in it.
Thanks. I actually recently just sang that song on Broadway during the Americana Music Festival. I was lucky enough to get invited by Six Shooter Records to play one of their little shows at a place called Second Fiddle. And I just played it, me and a guitar, and I really... It was really kind of emotional to play it in a place, you know, where the song was written about that strip and people that play in those bars. So,
yeah,
it was really quite a moving experience.
Isn't that something? It's so great that the music can move you as well as the audience. And obviously, as listeners, when we see that in a performer, that means that much more to us because it's coming from a real place.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know I'm inspired by people that sing from a real place and sing with passion. So I've been learned by them.
Now, I also love songs done acoustically, as you just said there. You know, you hear a song produced, and that's great the way we just did. But then when you hear it stripped down and it's just the vocal and the guitar, it brings a new dimension to a song.
Yeah, there's something, I mean, I also really love doing those sort of intimate acoustic shows for that reason as well. It does bring another dimension, and it is very intimate, and I think it just brings people in even closer and feel more part of what's going on in a way. So, I'm a big fan of doing those intimate stripped-down shows.
Now, a lot of my listeners may remember you from Nashville, the big TV show. I'm a huge fan of it, been watching pretty much since the first season, and actually the second season, as we're doing this interview, airs tonight. You were in episode 6. You played yourself. You beat out Avery Barkley's band for to be the opener for the Lumineers on that particular episode, and you performed your single at that time, The Day You Die. How cool was it being on Nashville?
It was very cool. It was a very interesting experience. I didn't really know too much about the television world and all that went on behind the scenes. So I was fascinated the whole time I was doing it, and it sure was a lot of fun. It was nice to you know, for my mom to turn on the television and see me. It was very cool. I enjoyed every minute of it.
So you got to perform, and then they used two of your songs on the show as well. So good exposure for that, because I remember hearing a lot about you at that time because of that show.
Yeah, it was great exposure. I think they're doing a great thing by using music from artists that aren't mainstream. And it's interesting because it's a show that is about two rivaling sort of pop country divas. But then there's this undercurrent of these struggling artists that's going on in the show as well, which I guess lends itself to using all kinds of music on the show. And I give them so much kudos for using music like mine and other music out there. Like, I think they've used Shovel and Rope as well, which are a great duo and have great music. So, yeah, it's great. It's great to have a platform for artists like me to get exposure like that.
Now, do you feel pretty comfortable? You said that was your first foray into television, being in front of the camera. You've done several videos, and I understand you're currently planning one to shoot a new one. Do you feel pretty relaxed in front of the camera?
Not all the time. I mean, I think I can pull it off, because when it comes to performing, like when I'm performing a song, I have a lack of inhibition when it comes to that. But when it comes to like acting or posing or something like that, it's a little awkward. I get a little bit nervous about it. But you know, you get used to it. It's part of the deal, right? You just kind of, you know, you just do what you're told and hope it comes across. And I'm very lucky. I work with great people that make me feel very comfortable. So the guy that's doing my new video also directed Black Fly, which is the video off my first record. Michael Maxis is his name, and he's a great, great guy, and I feel very comfortable around him, and I love his ideas. So I'm quite looking forward to the experience this time around.
Now, just a few weeks back, you were on the CCMAs with Dean Brody, another fellow musician and artist, doing so well on the country scene, and his new single is Bounty. I remember first time hearing it on the radio and just thinking how fresh it sounded. It's a very different kind of song, but it's great to hear, and you are part of that. Can you talk about, first of all, the song, recording it with Dean, and then performing it on the CCMAs?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I agree with you, I think the song is incredible, and I think good for Dean for taking a subject matter that's kind of dark. If you really strip it down, it's a romantic murder ballad, and putting it out there as a single, and I mean, good for him and his team and for radio for picking it up, and I think it's fantastic, and I'm so honored to be part of something like that. You know, I was asked, and it was funny, I was about to go away on a Scandinavian tour literally the next day, and they're like, oh, do you think you could come in the studio and do a bit part on this song? And I was going to, like, I didn't even hear the song before. I was going to make up my mind to say no, and it was just, and it was nothing against Dean or anything. It was just that I had to go, you know, to tour the next day, and I had so much packing to do, and I was really busy. But then I listened to the song, and the song is really what drew me in. And I thought, wow, you know, this is up my alley. This is a great song, and you know, and I thought Dean had a great voice, and I just loved the way it was produced. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I will do this. I'll get out there, and I'll do this for sure. So, yeah, I went in and recorded it, and next thing I knew, you know, I find out, you know, the CCMA was coming around, and Dean's playing, and he so graciously asked that I'd be part of the performance on the CCMAs, and I'd never done anything like that before. It was my first time doing sort of that, well, it was in the Rexall Center, right? So it's a big yep. place to play. And you know, doing the whole TV broadcast and all the behind
yeah.
the scenes, it's always so exciting. But I had a great time. He's a great guy. He's a top-notch person, and he deserves all the success that comes his way, and nothing but great things to say about him, for sure.
Yeah, such a great singer, a songwriter. I mean, so many great songs he's written so far. And Bounty is great, as I said. It's just something very refreshing. And then when your part comes in, it's cool to have that contrast. We have a female voice on it. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people who maybe don't know you from the other things will now wonder, who is that voice on there? And they're going to go on YouTube and figure out who you are and search out your other stuff.
It's so great for that sort of thing. And hopefully they like my other stuff, too.
Let's talk about a few of your influences and people that you've done covers of, because I've on YouTube, you cover a lot of different songs and do them so well. One of them is Leonard Cohen. You talked about growing up and being a fan of his. Of course, a great Canadian, a legend all of us.
Legend, yes. That's all in part to my mom. My mom had excellent taste in music as I was growing up, and she introduced me to Leonard Cohen and... Man, he's so great. I have a tattoo of Bird on a Wire, like, tattooed. It's, like, on my wrist. And just because I love, that's one of my favorite songs of his. But, you know, there's so many great songs that he's done. And just the way he sees the world through his poetic eyes is incredible to me. And I love his songs. I think his songs are some of the best songs in the world. And, you know, I love doing those covers. You know, I got a piano not too long ago. I decided to start relearning and teaching myself how to play piano again. And I thought it would be really fun to reinterpret some of these cover songs as piano ballads. So that was one of the ones that I'd done, and it was really fun to do it.
Yeah, that was great. And there's also I think that was the song Hotel. One of the
Chelsea
covers.
Chelsea Hotel number 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a song. It's kind of, I guess, about him and Janis Joplin, as the legend goes. So he's another favorite of mine. I love her.
Fantastic. Another song that you do of Leonard's is, of course, Hallelujah, which is, I mean, it's been recorded by so many people. It's become a modern-day classic.
Yeah, I did that a long time ago before I realized that so many people have covered it. And not that I wouldn't do it again, but if I were to do it again, I'd probably do it in a different way, because it's been, I mean, it's a growing process, this whole music business thing. It's a learning process. And for me, what I've learned is that doing covers is it just lends itself so much more to interpreting and reimagining them in ways that are much different than the original, you know, because, you know, if you sound like the original, then it just sort of sounds like the original. But I think it's much more interesting to slow it down or speed it up or put a different, you know, instrument that you wouldn't think to put on it. So I like to change it, and I do that with some of my live covers, too. We do a cover of Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash, and we do a really trippy, kind of slow, sultry version of it, which is a lot of fun.
That's cool. Yeah, I like when songs like that get changed up and they sound different, and it puts it in your style in this case. Another example of that from, I think it's from Little Red Boots, you did I'm on Fire, or it might have been the last album. And you did a different spin on that song, the Bruce Springsteen song.
Yeah, you're right. It was from the Little Red Boots. I think it was a bonus on the iTunes, that song. And, I mean, gosh, who doesn't love that song? That song's so great. And, again, we just try to reimagine them in different ways and put our own spin on it when we're in the, you know, studios and it's a produced thing. And that's another one that I've always loved growing up. He's another, you know, I've seen him play a couple times, and I have a lot of his records, so I'm a big fan of Bruce Springsteen. Bruce and Tom Petty.
Nice. Now, Johnny Cash, Man in Black, we talked about him earlier, and you do Folsom Prison Blues. People can see that online, different concerts that you've done that at. What does he mean to you? What does Johnny Cash's music mean?
So Johnny Cash is the ultimate for me. He's my number one most favorite musician of all time. Because what I find so amazing about him is that he's so well respected in the music world, in every genre, spanning from hip hop to metal to punk to rock to country. Just anybody you ask is a fan, and he's just so much more than a country musician. You know, he's encompassed everything, and I think it was because he was such a true original. And there's just no other Johnny Cash. There's nobody else that sounds like him. There's nobody else that can be him. He was such a unique character, and I'm a huge fan of his voice. I'm a huge fan of the style of music he did. I'm a huge fan of his lyrics and his writing, and also his reimagining of covers as well, with you know, all those American recordings and the Rick Rubin covers that were on there with Hurt and Soundgarden song, Rusty Cage, Personal Jesus, all those, you know, and he just does such an amazing job reimagining them. So he's just kind of the one that I look up to career-wise and basically in every aspect. And, there's no other than Johnny Cash for me. He's the man.
That is so cool.
He inspired me to wear black.
Exactly. So you've got you wear black, and then you've got the red lipstick and the red boots. Nice contrast.
Yeah, red and black. So, you know, it's dark, but it's not too dark. Just in case somebody thought I was a goth.
There's a little bit of hope in there amidst the black. There's the red. Let's turn to another song from Tin Star, Lindy. And this song is called Hard as This. What can you tell us about this song?
This is, well, I was talking about my friend Bruce from Nashville, who's a songwriter, and this is my first time writing a song from a perspective that was not my own, but I could very much relate to. And Bruce came to my house one night, and he was having some lady troubles, and he was laughing. He was on his iPhone, and he was laughing at something, and I said, "What are you laughing at?" And he said, "Oh, well, this girl said she needed space, so I sent her a picture," and then he showed me it was a picture of an astronaut in space. And I said, "Bruce, there's a song in that." And so we took all those sayings that people say when they're trying to shun you but don't have the cojones to be straight up with you, and we made a quirky little song about it called "Hard as This."
Let's hear it now from Lindy Ortega on In the Country. And that is Lindy Ortega. The song is called "Hard as This." It's part of her album Tin Star that's going to be coming out on October 8th. You can, in fact, pre-order it now on iTunes, and that single is available already for download. Her website is lindyortega.com. Now, Lindy, you are from Ontario originally, and I understand you've been living down in Nashville a couple of years now?
It'll be almost 2 years this December.
Was it a tough decision at the time, or I assume obviously driven by the passion to get closer to the music scene?
Yeah, there was that. It was a bit of a rash decision that I just kind of went full throttle with and didn't look back. So it should have been a tough decision, but I was just like, no, I'm doing this. And I'm so glad that I did, because I find this city just helps me be more productive because everybody here is always working and always writing songs and doing things. So it just makes me want to do it too. So I just keep on writing songs because I'm here.
That's great. And there are so many Canadians down there from the country music world who either visit down there, obviously, to write, but a lot of them live down there now. So there's a real community of Canadians.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's lots of Canadians, and there's also lots of Australians as well. So there's quite a few people from all over that come here. It's actually quite difficult to find a true Nashvillean here because everybody sort of comes from everywhere. So it's one of those kinds of cities. But it also makes it really great. There's so many great people to meet here.
Do you have a favorite venue in Nashville that you like to perform?
You know, I really like the Basement, which is it's called the Basement because it's under a record store, and it's kind of it's kind of a small little venue, but there's a lot of character to it, and I guess I've just seen some great music there, and it's a lot of fun. The High Watt I've played a few times here, which is part of it's got the High Watt and the Cannery Ballroom and Mercy Lounge, like three venues in one, which is kind of neat. And they've always been they've been good to me there, so it always makes me want to go back and play, which I am in October. So, but there's just lots of great venues here.
That's awesome, and we should mention that you've got, I understand, a Western Canada tour coming up, U.S. as well, and Ontario. So you're going all over the place for the fall.
Yeah, they keep me busy. Going over all over America and all over Canada, and I've got a few different openers for different regions. So I'm really excited. The U.S. I've got a wonderful fellow named Brett Detter, who's an incredible old timey country inspired musician who I love, and Devin Cuddy will be playing some shows, and North Cote will be playing some shows. So. I'm really looking forward to this one. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think there's going to be some collaborations, and I'm bringing my piano out and electric. I'm going electric with some songs, so I'm bringing the hollow body. It's like a rockabilly guitar, but I'm bringing that out, so it's going to be fun. I'm going to shake it up.
That sounds great. People can head to your website to find out the exact dates. Lindy, how does somebody get better at songwriting? Over time, they're going to get better, hopefully, if they head in the right direction. But what puts them in that direction of writing better stuff?
Being a very good listener, I think, and listening to the greats, and taking notes and making sure that you're writing. I always feel, I guess it could be different for people that are writing for different reasons, but if your goal is to write hit songs for radio, then I guess that's a different kind of great songwriter. But if your goal is to write songs that are really moving and touching and evoking emotion from people, which is a different thing, and I think if that's your goal, then I think you need to really write from your heart and make sure that that's translated with your words. And it's good to write songs that people, can relate to in that respect. And instead of it being, sometimes songs can be a little too esoteric and people don't really know, they can't really relate to it because they don't really know. Like people try to be a little too artsy with their wording or something. But I think it's good to just, convey your emotions in an honest way through your words. And I think that makes a good songwriter. And always be a student. Always be a student of the industry. And never feel that you've got it all figured out, because you never do.
Yeah, you want to stay hungry. As you said, you want to feel like you haven't learned everything yet, because there's always room to improve and something new to do in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in all aspects, not just songwriting, but performance, and in all aspects of music as well. So it applies to everything.
It must be great. Yeah, it must be great, Lindy, when you are on stage or in whatever form it takes, and you're singing a song and you're moving an audience. You know that you're making a difference, and they're maybe it's taking them back to some time in their life, or it's inspiring them. That's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah, I live for that. Performing is my favorite thing to do, and I just love that sort of live connection with people. You get a sense of, they say music is the universal language, and I really truly feel that it can really bond us all together. It's just, you know, you get people from all walks of life in a room together, all coming together over song. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things, you know, that is to occur. And I'm glad that I'm able to provide that in a room for people, and I'm glad that people get something out of it. And I'm just so moved by the experience of, you know, connecting with humanity, I guess you can say.
That's what it comes down to. You're connecting one-on-one and to a crowd. Did you come from a musical family, or is this a path that you started yourself?
Well, my dad was a bass player in a Latin band when I was growing up, for the early years of my childhood. So definitely my introduction to instruments and a microphone came from my dad, because he was the band leader, and all the equipment was in our basement. So it was like a treasure trove to go and discover it all. And so that definitely played a part, for sure. And I think, though my mom wasn't a musician, she was, like I said, had a really amazing record collection, and introduced me to music that stuck with me. And the older I got, the more drawn I was towards those sounds, because I guess they just reminded me of my childhood. So I have a lot to thank her for as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a diverse background of influences for you. And we do get the music that we're introduced to when we're young, even though sometimes people rebel from it, you know, at a certain point, but they come back to it because it takes you back to those early years.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, I thought my parents were cool when I was a kid, because I was kind of a loner and an only child. And so I hung out with them a lot. Like, I spent my weekends with my parents. And I thought their music was cool. I thought what they were listening to was cool. And I really did love a lot of what my mom exposed me to. And also my dad with some of the Latin music, you know, like Santana and Gypsy Kings and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Now, do you have any dream duet partners, Lindy, a list of, or just even in your mind, of course, of somebody you want to go into the studio? It might be a couple of people that you want to go in and record a duet with.
Yeah, there's a few. So I'm starting to really annoy Cor Blind about getting that done, because I would love to I'd love to do a duet or write a song.
That'd be a good one.
I also I just played the Americana Fest, and Matt Mays was on the bill with me. And I'd love to do something fun with him. And then I guess on a large scale level, if we're going to dream big, I would say, Willie Nelson. I love Willie Nelson. I love Emmy Lou Harris. You know, she's fantastic. I love what some of the duets that she did with Linda Ronstadt and Dolly Parton were fantastic. So it'd be great to do something with her. Oh, God, there's so many. I can't list them all, but I guess those are the few that come to mind at first.
Those are great examples, Lindy. Let's talk a bit about Tin Star, the album. It's coming out October 8th. We heard a couple of the tracks from it on the show today. What else can you tell us about the album that people are going to hear, the kind of sounds or a special song or two? What hints can you give us?
Well, there's a love song for the dead on there, another bit of my quirky, I guess, songwriting things come into play with that. You know, it was a song where I was basically thinking about people that live their whole lives alone. Like, say their you know, parents might have died when they were young, and they had no other siblings, and spent their whole lives alone, and then died alone, and nobody came to their funeral. And I guess I'm weird. I spend time thinking about people like that, and it kind of gnaws on my conscience and on my mind. And so so I wrote a love song for them in tribute to those lonely souls that were never loved. And so that song, although it does definitely raise eyebrows, that song.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know exactly right away. Well, I mean... People that don't have their mind in the gutter get it, and then the ones that have their mind in the gutter don't get it. So there's that. The last song on the record was a song. I didn't play the piano, but I wrote it on piano. But I left it to the really, really good piano player to play it. although I am going to be playing it live, so when it comes to the touring show. However, it's my first foray into sort of the gospel approach to writing a song. So it's kind of a gospel-y, inspired song, that one. And I wrote a song about Frida Kahlo, who was a wonderful inspirational female painter from Mexico. I wrote a song in tribute to her. So that's on there. It's a song about my love for the city of New Orleans, which is a magical, spooky place.
Have you been there a couple of time or two?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have my sights set on maybe living there for 6 months or something. I'm such a fan of things that juxtapose in the universe, because I think it just exists naturally, and I think it's so fascinating. And I find that I find New Orleans to be one of those places where you get sort of the beautiful, colorful architecture and the music and the people, and then you get this really spooky undertone and dangerous undertone to it. And I'm drawn to it all. I just find it an incredible city.
Very interesting. Well, the album sounds terrific, and that song that you mentioned, I couldn't help but think of Hank Williams or Leonard Cohen, because they had dark songs as well that would kind of come from that or into that.
Yeah, absolutely, and they are inspirations for me in writing songs like that. And, you know, you get flack sometimes because people, expect you to write a certain way and write about certain things. But I pride myself in being somebody that writes about things that are a little off the cuff, because I just think it's more interesting for a listener to hear something a little different from time to time instead of, you know, your typical, things that you always hear, I guess, in country songs, blue jeans and beer and whatever.
Trucks.
I felt like writing a love song for dead people.
That is so cool. Well, it's so cool because, I love your voice and your sound, the whole style, and people can go on YouTube and hear for themselves, of course, and check out your albums online. And there's just something really cool about the sound, the instruments, and just the whole feeling that it evokes. Lindy, it has been such a pleasure. I really look forward to having you on, and it was great to chat with you and share these songs.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation, and hello to your listeners out there.
Well, thank you so much for being here. It was my pleasure. Once again, Lindy Ortega has been my guest on the line from Nashville. Brand new album is called Tin Star. You can get it October 8th on iTunes. There's going to be a vinyl edition of it. On iTunes, you can pre-order it now, in fact, and the single Tin Star is ready to download as of right now. I'm Dave Woods. For more country music interviews, be sure to head to inthecountryinterviews.com.